Alison Marchant, Alison Marchant. I was born 1959 and I moved into Colville Road in 1986, and I had gone to ACME, I think the year before, to inquire as to how you could apply to have an ACME house. And I do remember a student who was on my postgraduate course at the Slade already had a house because she had applied after her BA, because you had to be out of college, I think, at least a year. And she'd gone down to Leytonstone and she said, oh God, it was terrible. She couldn't possibly live there. And she went back to ACME and they gave her a house at the back of King's Road. And I went down to Leytonstone feeling a bit apprehensive, because when I was a foundation student at Loughton College in Essex, some of my friends lived in Leyton, and I always saw it as a bit inner city. But I'd already by this time lived in London since 1982. So I suppose my attitude was quite different. And I remember coming down Colville Road and thinking that it was quite a nice street with these slightly dishevelled Victorian houses with big hedges. And there were a lot of trees. And it was quite quiet and peaceful, actually, just off Grove Green Road, which was very busy. And there was a little group of children running up and down the street playing. And just the ambience of the noise of the children was quite nice. And I got to 34 Colville Road and I met Tara Babel, a performance artist, who had also been interviewed by ACME and was to look at the house. And we both quite liked it. And ACME told us that the house could be divided into two flats quite easily. There was a bathroom upstairs, and downstairs there was a toilet in the garden. And ACME said they would put a shower in the kitchen. So whoever was downstairs would have a bathroom in between the outside loo and the kitchen. And Tara quite liked that because she was a little bit eccentric, and I guess we all were, really. And she actually liked the feel of the downstairs of the house, and I liked upstairs because it was very light. And also, like, the thing was, as soon as you went up those stairs, there was this awful lino, this green lino, with metal on the treads hiding this lovely Victorian staircase. So it was quite big, actually, and I was quite pleased not to be one artist in a house like other artists down Colville Road, because they were a little bit rambling, although they were nowhere near as big as the places in Filliabrook Road I'd heard about. But the space was just right for me and it felt quite cosy. There was, as you came up the stairs, there was a little hallway, which was actually big enough to put this sideboard that had been left in my bedroom. It was quite big, a 1940s sideboard with drawers and two cupboards, which I used to store some of my art materials, and I painted a dark green. And you'd go through to the room at the back, which was the kitchen, and it was about 12 feet long, and down one side were all the kitchen units that had been put in quite recently. This white formica, but basic, but quite nice. And the window looked out onto the graveyard and the railway line and the back garden. And there was a floor-to-ceiling cupboard, wood panelled, really kind of interesting. And I put lots of pots and pans and things like that in there, obviously. And then as you walked back out into the hallway, The bathroom was on the left, then you'd go up two steps, and then on the left was another fair-sized room, which I kept as my bedroom, living room. And the kitchen was also a kitchen, living room. And then on the right, there was this, like, the lovely Victorian banisters going round in a big double cupboard, wood-panelled cupboard, where I kept a lot of my art materials. And there was also a cupboard like that in the bedroom where I just kept my clothes. And then at the front of the house on the left was the big bay windowed room, which I kept as my studio, which would have been the master bedroom, and a little box room, which kind of doubled up as storage space sometimes, or a spare room, or even another workspace. This green lino went right through the flat, this DHS looking lino. And the place hadn't been painted for a while, but all round the flat was this wood chip wallpaper. And in every room apart from the bathroom and the kitchen. And I did try and remove it from the studio room at the front, but part of the plaster came away with it, so I thought, no, don't. And I repaired it. And then just painted all the wood chip paper white. Apart from in the hall in the kitchen, which I painted this lovely cream colour, which had a kind of warm feeling, with woodwork to match. And I ripped up the lino in the studio, which was quite hard work because it had been really tightly secured to the floor, and underneath was all the boarding. And someone who put it down did a really good, proper job. And I took all the lino off from the hallway and the staircase so that I could let this wonderful Victorian staircase breathe. And I sanded down all those floors and painted the staircase in parts and varnished it. And I left this lino in the box room, the bedroom, and the kitchen, and the bathroom, because it was good insulation, and I decided to paint it with grey liquid lino, and it looked really good. It was really flat, and so by the end of the painting, which actually probably took me about 4 weeks, and the sanding, which was the most enduring work, but I'd got off really lightly because a lot of acne artists would even be, you know, would be knocking down walls and doing sort of major repair work. So the flat was in pretty good condition, and I knew that it had been short life before because it had that feeling about it. It did need painting. There was sort of evidence that quite a lot of people had lived in the house before, and children as well, because on some of the doors there were these little spiral drawings, children's height, which were really sweet, but I painted over those. And anyway, once I got the place sorted, it looked really nice. In my studio, I put two sheets up on the window and let them drape, so they looked quite classical in their simplicity. And in the box room at the front, I made some cotton, white cotton curtains, because there was a curtain rail there, and bought a really nice piece of lace, squared, old heavy lace, to go on the lower part of the sash window. So it was fairly private, but it let the light in, and had a simple blind in the kitchen bedroom. And I was actually unemployed at the time, so I'd signed on in Waltham Forest, and a man came round from the DHSS, because at that time you could put in a claim for furniture. And he came round slightly suspicious and a little bit fierce. And when he got into this sort of immaculate empty space, apart from in my bedroom, I was sleeping in my sleeping bag, and all I'd brought with me were my books and clothes and a couple of portfolios, because I'd already been doing installation at Slade, and my portfolios were just photographs of installations and slides. So I didn't really have any work to speak of. And all the work I'd made as an undergrad at Nottingham, I had to place in the skip because I was moving down to London. And anyway, this man from the DHSS just stood there in this empty studio and just said, "You've got nothing. So I'll put in an application for you. You can claim for carpets and curtains and a cooker and a fridge and so forth and a bed." And anyway, within a couple of weeks, I got a cheque for about £100, which actually most of that covered the paint and the sanding, because that was quite expensive, really, like the liquid lino. And I bought an orthopaedic mattress, which I just had on the floor. And then slowly I got tables and chairs, just really just solid wooden tables, which I painted up to look nice. And I just painted them grey. And then I received another cheque a couple of weeks later for about £100. But by this time, I'd got all the furniture I needed really cheaply. But I went along to this local second-hand furniture place because the cheque was in his name. And I looked in the shop to see if there was anything else I needed. And I saw this really nice writing bureau. But it wasn't very much. It was about, I don't know, £20-30. So I asked the man in the shop that if I bought this bureau, would he give me the change if I paid him by cheque? And he said he didn't have enough money in the till, but he'd give me the money tomorrow. And he said, "There's no point in me doing this if I don't make any money out of it." And he said he'd deliver the bureau, but he only took about £10, which was really nice. And I think there were quite a few people in the area who actually really inadvertently sort of helped out the artists, really. For example, there was a Greek man in Leighton High Road who would give us really big portions of food when we went to eat there. And I remember speaking to Pete Owen, and he said he went there and said he was really generous. But then after a while, I mean, this man seemed to be losing money, and he changed the way his shop was, and he would give out portions quite rightly in boxes that were all measured, because he'd basically been quite kind to the artists because they were all going there. And there was a general kind of community feeling about the place. Like on Colville Road in the summer, people would have their furniture from the house in the front of the house and would sit out chatting. And it was, I kind of thought, oh, it's a really old London sort of feeling. And the elderly people who were like gatepost leaners, who would lean all day or most of the day on their gate chatting to people as they went by, and a really sort of healthy, friendly environment. And anyway, going back to my house, so I'd got it into a kind of proper live-work situation, and I'd signed on, and then I decided I would before I actually started work, I designed some hats and matching bags, which I took down to some shops in the King's Road and Covent Garden and a fashion shop in Bleak Street. And I'd inherited this little sewing machine, which was 1950s, in a kind of projector type case, which actually I since found out was a collector's item. And I got the sewing machine up and working, and I'd, in King's Road, like one shop, they were all small orders, like they would order maybe 8 hats with matching bags. And the design I kept really simple because I wanted them to be the sort of thing that artists would wear that were fashionable but practical at the same time. And I made these little hats, which were like Russian hats, but not so big, with little ear flaps. And they had buttons on the back, which were really beautiful and knotted and corded. And the bags that matched were duffel bags, but the hats and the bags were made in fun fur, which was quite fashionable in the 80s. And you'd get bright pink, orange, yellow, red, blue, and also leopard and zebra, and a black as well. And I got really nice paisley lining, and I cord in finishing around the hats and matching on the bags, which would be the straps and the little hooks and everything. And so I managed to sell to two shops in King's Road, one shop in Covent Garden and one shop in Bleak Street. And so, for example, the other shop in King's Road bought three hats, black, leopard and zebra, with matching bags. And then I put that money aside. I'd be selling the hats for £15 each, and the bags would be £30. So the markup on the bags would be selling in the shops for £60, and the hats would be going for £30. And I put the money aside to go to New York because I wanted to approach Franklin Furnace in Tribeca to do a group show, which I wanted to curate with people I'd worked with at Nottingham at the art school there. And that all sort of went ahead, and I did go on the trip, and I sold some more hats and bags in St Mark's to two different shops, and so really covered my trip as well. And then the following year I curated a show called Heritage, which was about the situation of Thatcher's Britain at the time, although the work wasn't overtly political. The artists were working with photocopy and made sort of multiples, so they were easy to transport by plane as hand luggage, basically. But they developed into quite big war pieces, and each artist produced a book which went with the war piece, and the book was deposited in the Franklin Furnace archive afterwards. So going back to my house, there was a beautiful path outside which kind of went into the house and was the hallway floor. I think it's called jacquard or something like that, but basically earthy coloured tiles and white tiles, which the sort that you'd see in fired earth shop. And as this path in the front, it was broken, and as I went up that path I was getting an idea, because it looked like I could quite easily make a map of the British Isles there, because it was more or less that shape. And I just mixed some cement and reconfigured the tiles, so it became a map of the British Isles, and I called it Broken Pathway. And outside my bedroom window, the garden in the house next door, number 32, was full of rubbish, which was tangled up with long grass. And as I wasn't working, I decided that what I would do, because the scene was quite depressing, was I would spend a week clearing that garden, which I did. And the woman the other side of this house was a single parent with about three children, and she was really nice, and her husband worked for the council, and he got all these black bags for me, and we bagged it all up, and the council came and collected the rubbish. And I didn't want to use the garden particularly, but the woman next door planted it with vegetables, and the children used to play in there. So it just improved the view from my window tremendously. And at the front of the house, This house, 32 Colville Road, it was the first empty house in the street, and it was kind of like a window into the future as to what that street would be like when people had been evicted and the houses were to be demolished for the M11. And I decided to make something positive of this house, in a sense. And I'd been researching my family history. And actually, I was quite influenced with the whole kind of atmosphere of the place, of these Victorian houses, and slightly dilapidated. And I felt that this house was a really good frame for one of the photographs. And a friend of mine, Paul Raftery, was at that time doing photographic evening classes. And the space in which he used was an old science lab. And he was making a large photograph, actually, for the show at the Franklin Furnace that I'd organised. And I said to him that I'd really like to just simply enlarge a family photograph to 6 foot square to sight in the doorway on the corrugated iron of 32 Colville Road. So one evening, that's what we did. And I bought a roll of photographic paper and we pinned it up on the wall of the lab and projected it. And it had quite a long exposure, a couple of minutes or something. And then we developed them and fixed them in these garden troughs, which we'd bought from the DIY shop. And although the paper was longer than the troughs, because they weren't made for that, it was a little bit awkward. But the kind of slight imperfections in the developing process I quite liked, because it went with the nature of the old photograph. We left it to dry. And later, I installed it in the porch of 32 Colville Road. Anyway, the neighbour opposite was Zoe Redman, a filmmaker. And after a while, she told me that a little groups of people would gather at our gatepost and look at the image and talk about it. And that, you know, it was quite clear what that image was about. The fact that that house was a home and also had the feeling of the threat of the future evictions, but actually celebrated that house. And I do remember hearing some children playing in the porch and saying that they thought it was quite ghostly. And there was a pile of rubbish in that front garden. And I did consider clearing it away, but I thought, no, it's part of the house, because it had different kinds of rubbish, and one was a paint palette that an artist had dumped there. And I wanted to keep that aspect of it. And the fact that there was a photograph there actually made it into, from a non-space of dereliction into a space with meaning again. And so those were my pieces, and I worked quite prolifically at that time because the space allowed it. And